We now take you to the Habs fan versus Leafs fan roller coaster of emotions, time travel edition. And now, Habs fan versus Leafs fan, 3 weeks ago.
Saying this is unbelievable. I mean, it's October. This team is playing so well. Seriously, you got to be so impressed. Come on, like, acknowledge it, man. Acknowledge the truth. Mm-hmm. These Maple Leafs can score four lines, pure depth. You know, Marner, Nylander, Matthews doing what they're supposed to do. Freddie Anderson, like, this guy could be Vezina caliber one day. I really believe that. I believe he has the will and fortitude. You know what I'm saying? And you know what? The D is getting better all the time, and it's putting us in a position where we can compete. And I've never been more confident and happy with the kind of team we have right now.
And now, present day, Habs fan versus Leafs fan. Look at you, crowning the Leafs Stanley Cup champions in October. That's so unlike you. I've never seen that before, especially from a Leafs fan. You've got Mitch Marner, banished to the fourth line. How's that working out for you? Sophomore jinx, personified. You've got sweet Willie Nylander. He's slowed down. I even have him in my pool.
So bored. Defense.
Wow, what a revelation. They're struggling. Jake Gardner, struggling yet again. Roman Polak is your number one shutdown guy. Him with his broken leg. What is it with you guys signing aged defensemen with a history of broken legs? You may as well bring back Stefan Robida. And Freddie Anderson? Can we talk about Freddie Anderson here? Yet another backup goalie from the state of California that your team is trying to pass off as a legitimate starter.
You don't have a humble bone in your body. I don't know why I'm doing this. Seriously, I got better things to do. You know what? I think you need to just call this show Habs Fan because I'm done. You know, I wasn't bluffing, eh? I was seriously ready to walk off the show and call my agent.
Well, that would have been terrible. I mean, what would we do for bluster? We wouldn't have any more.
You know, it's funny how quickly fortunes change in today's NHL. You know, it's like we do this show weekly and we have a lot of listeners and people love what we talk about, but this is ridiculous now. Like, we totally swapped places in many respects. Although we did share the amazing kinship and bond of both beating the Vegas Golden Knights, but I'll tell you, I watched your game and your team took control. My team, on the other hand, was lucky to get the extra point to even bring it to a shootout. They did not play well against the Vegas Golden Knights, and the media's covering it up. It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, it is. It is something that how much the tables have turned. But I have to thank you and the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't know what, actually, I don't have to thank you, but the Toronto
Go ahead, thank me. The
Toronto Maple Leafs for softening up the Montreal Canadiens opponents. Montreal's got a little bit of a comfort schedule going on here. The Leafs played the Golden Knights on Monday night. Montreal was nicely resting at home on Monday night. Tuesday night, in comes a tired Vegas team on the road, and Montreal beats them. Tonight, the Leafs are playing the Minnesota Wild. What's Montreal doing? They're resting at home, sleeping in their beds Wednesday night, and Thursday night, in come the road-weary Minnesota Wild. So the Leafs are softening up Montreal's opponents, so I thank you for that.
Well, thank you for that long roundabout explanation that I knew from the beginning, not because they're actually going out and playing the same opponents. But early on, the Leafs put a lot of fear into their opponents, right? Like, there were a lot of teams that came in, I think, and took them for granted. And when they started beating quality teams like the Caps and the Blackhawks, and you could even argue the Jets, then we were seeing something really special happening. The problem is, I think the Leafs are starting to believe in their own bluster, in their own hype.
Well, that's what I said. Because they have, if you remember,
haven't been ready for their opponents.
The only hope that I had for the Leafs faltering was the blue and white disease. And you just said
it's dreaded.
You're thinking that they might be actually believing their own press, and that goes in part to the blue and white disease. So maybe that's happened. Maybe it's happened to Mitch Marner. Maybe that's why he's banished to the fourth line, because he's believing in what he is.
I don't know.
He's believing that he's the next Patrick Kane. But
okay, easy there. Don't pick on him. Pick on the guy you should be picking on, which is William Nylander, the guy you've got in the pool. That's who you should be picking on. He's the one who's played soullessly, if you will.
I saw him miss a one-timer. Open net on Monday night. So, no, the chances are there, so I'm not going to blame Sweet Willie. He's not the one playing on the fourth line.
I know, but you got to finish. If you're going to play in the top six, you got to be a finisher. This league is about finishing. It's not about trying or missed attempts. You got to get it done. Why? Because in today's NHL, how many open nets do you really get during the course of a game? You got to convert.
About 75. And we know it's such a 75, maybe.
It's a momentum-based game, right? How many games could the Maple Leafs have stayed in and turned the tide? And I still can't get over the fact that Mike Babcock did not challenge the call when Freddie Anderson took a clear shot to the head. And it was abundantly obvious to anybody who was watching at home that that was challengeable, reviewable, and quite frankly, it would have been overturned. And I found out the day later, as many journalists did in the market, that Babcock said, "This one's on me. That was my mistake. I didn't hear from anyone, or I wasn't listening, or I wasn't paying attention." And I'm thinking, wow, dude, you're very lucky that you are the untouchable one, because most coaches would have been raked over the coals for that, right? Especially yours. If Claude Julien makes that mistake, he gets raked over the coals, and you get a chance to write about it with like 8 different multi-dimensional articles on what kind of a dumbass he is. How does that happen in Toronto with the untouchable one?
Well, I think it's exactly what you said. He's the untouchable one. Right now, Mike Babcock cannot make a mistake. I'm not sure how he didn't make that call to challenge that goal, but yeah. It's like he can't do any wrong. Right now, he is the untouchable one, as we can relate to in our great sketch that we did several episodes ago. But I don't know. The only thing is that it's an 8-year contract, $50 million. He's Mike Babcock. You can't touch him. You can't doubt Mike Babcock. And I'm wondering how long of a leash he has. I think it's a four-year leash. That's what he has.
Yeah, 4-year leash, or as I like to call it, a too-big-to-fail contract, right? Because this team could go in a tailspin for a year and a half, and this organization would be stuck with him, right? Because what are you going to do? You've got too many years left, and you've got a coach with a great reputation. Listen, I'm not going to get ahead of myself. Mistakes happen. But it's just frustrating when you can control certain facets of the game, and then you end up apologizing to the media afterwards that it was a slight oversight in a game that was winnable. Because that night, St. Louis wasn't playing very well either. I hope this week, with the Maple Leafs, we actually see a concerted effort on all fronts, because this team has looked really bad. That West Coast trip was embarrassing. I have not seen so many defensive gaffes in one period since the dreaded early Ron Wilson days. Like, this was terrible.
Wow, I just woke up there. I think we should address the elephant in the room on how the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to win when the player carrying them is injured. And that's Austin Matthews with a upper body injury. He's out with upper body soreness, I believe it is. And yeah, he did look pretty damn good on Monday night, considering he already had the upper body soreness because he didn't take part in the morning skate. So what's going on with Austin Matthews? How are they going to win, because he's the one carrying the team?
Well, they're going to have to... I actually welcome the challenge of seeing which players step up, right? Because you're not going to get your healthy player... You're not going to get 100% health. I mean, Matthews has spoiled them. This is the first NHL game that he's missed, which is remarkable. He basically went the equivalent of, you know, a season plus almost a quarter without having any issues.
I know, that's amazing. He played, what, 96 games in a row? That's unheard of. I've never heard of a player playing 96 games in a row.
Well, but you know what? A player of his caliber and a focus and attention that he gets, he's starting to take some hard hits. I think it was 2 games ago when he got hit from behind when he was playing in St. Louis. It's obvious that the kid is going to absorb some serious punishment, and he hasn't even grown up yet. Like, he's not a Superman yet. He could be a bigger player than he is. He's only 20 years old. My question is, can the kids who look like children right now, like Mitch Marner, actually step up and put some fortitude to their game? You know, I'd like to see me a little bit more William Nylander consistently playing two-way hockey. The problem is, everyone's trying to score. No one's manning the store. Freddie Anderson is out to lunch. And yes, I am criticizing Freddie Anderson, even though a lot of people say, don't blame him, it's the D. Well, you need clutch saves too, right? You know that. You've been spoiled with them for the last half decade.
Yep, and now Charlie Lindgren is the man. Charlie Lindgren. Up from the A, helping Montreal break out of the streak. It's great. It's great. That's what Montreal needs, the big saves when they need them. And yes, I am talking and regaling Charlie Lindgren. I'm going to write an article that the league needs to recognize Charlie Lindgren, and he needs to be heralded. Let's talk about the Montreal Canadiens and how things have turned around for them. They've now won 3 games in a row, which is pretty damn good. And against some very quality opponents, not last night's Vegas Golden Knights, but actually considering where they are in the standings, that's a pretty good accomplishment. But against the Winnipeg Jets, which was a big, big game, and I think emotionally, because of the way they won, was big. They were down 4-2, middle of the third period, and the way that things were going for Montreal, it was very easy for them to pack it in. But instead, inspirational play by Brendan Gallagher, which has been very good during this last 9 games. I believe he has 10 points. And he was the key. He set up Thomas Plekanec to make the score 4-3 with some really good board play and a great pass to Plekanec, and actually having Plekanec score was huge. So I think there's a lot to be said about how Brendan has been helping carry the Montreal Canadiens. I think he's taking a lot of stress off of the guys who are required to score and being asked to score, like Pacioretty and Drouin and even Galchenyuk, and he's taking that stress off of them, and I think hence that is making it easier for Pacioretty, and you could see he's playing a little bit more loose. He's celebrating more, and it's good. I think Gallagher's the key. He is the proverbial straw that stirs the drink for the Montreal Canadiens.
I prefer Piece de la Resistance. And for a minute there, I felt like I was watching the score because you were giving me a full recap, and I'm thinking, he never does this when the team plays poorly. So good for you. You must be very excited. I bet right now you're just so excited. It's like Christmas for you because they've won, you know, 3 in a row and they're showing some life. But you and I both know, how far are you going to get with your fourth string goalie? Good luck. Good luck. Learn to goal. Learn to net mine.
He's actually their third string goalie, and he's a good prospect. He's a very good prospect. A lot of people do forecast that he can be a legitimate NHL starter one day. And this begs the question, so if you've got one of the top goaltending prospects in the league or not in the NHL, a lot of scouts and a lot of other hockey insiders say he's a legitimate, soon-to-be NHL starter, why do you go out and sign Carey Price for 8 years, $10.5 million per, a 30-year-old Carey Price, may I add? It just makes me question everything Marc Bergevin does. Except, I mean, he actually signed Charlie Lindgren, so actually that's a good thing. But, yeah. Oh, Mark, what do you do? What are you doing?
You know, theoretically, you could be watching your team 5 years from now and still see all of the main pieces still intact, which is terrifying when you consider that they're not spring chickens anymore. I think that's what worries you the most. These guys are not getting any younger. And while you've got some real character players, and believe me, I've seen their character show in these last few games, your team has definitely played better. There's a lot of passion there. These guys have pride. Mm-hmm. They don't like the humiliation because they were getting humiliated. They were getting torched in the media. It was getting embarrassing. We've been speaking with friends of the show like Andrew Berkshire, Andrew Walker, and Omar White, and they all say the same thing, which is the Habs have the ability to do well. It's just a question of whether or not their depth and their support squad can show up the nights that Pacioretty and Price and Weber don't show up. And that's what we saw early in the season.
Well, I think it was pretty obvious through the first 9 games that a 3.9 shooting percentage, a .880 save percentage for Carey Price, and a power play that wasn't performing wasn't a true reflection of who Montreal was. It was just, when was this going to turn around? And right now it's turned around almost completely 180 degrees, where the shooting percentage has increased. Obviously, they're getting the goaltending that they needed, even without Carey Price. And supplementary scoring has kicked in, and that's essentially what was not happening in the first 9 games. Now, these recent 9 games has shown again that it's not sustainable, so they're going to have to eventually find that balance of who they really are. Are they really a 1-7-1 team? Are they really a 5 wins out of 7 games kind of team? They're going to balance out, and unfortunately still, as much as they're playing like 750 hockey in their last 7 games or so, that's not who they are. So everything's going to balance out, and unfortunately, with things balancing out, that 1-7-1 start may very well still bite them in the butt come April. It's very bad. That streak was a horrible streak, and as early as it was, and as everyone was saying it was early, it really will come to bite them at the end, I think.
Well, don't worry, because now that we have the Habs fan versus Leafs fan time-traveling edition of all the great things that happen in this world, I can't wait for our next episode when we go back in time and look at the life and times of Craig McTavish, Rick Tocchet, and Janet Gretzky.
Wow, that sounds like a great gambling ring.
Well, you knew it was going to happen sooner or later. All superstar players at some point have to face the inevitability of injuries, and apparently Austin Matthews is now battling a serious back injury that has reached a point where essentially he can't play tonight against the Minnesota Wild. Now, I know you're thinking, oh my God, this is a cataclysmic disaster, because let's face it, he is the franchise, but in many respects, he's merely a part of what is a larger scoring mosaic
that over the past week has struggled immeasurably to find balanced scoring. If not for recent heroics from players like Nazem Kadri and Tyler Bozak, there's a very good chance that the Maple Leafs could have lost all of their games on the West Coast trip, and were lucky to pull out a two-point victory against the Vegas Golden Knights. The Wild are a well-coached, highly disciplined, big veteran team, and even though they've struggled mightily this year, we're finally going to see whether these Maple Leafs can do the unthinkable, which is find a way to dig down deep and win with the guys that are on the ice, looking at the personnel and understanding who's willing to step up and demonstrate what they're capable of doing. And for a team that has players like James Van Riemsdyk and Connor Brown and Mitchell Marner, you would think, with the personnel on the ice, that this team has more than enough ample scoring to get them through a defensive-oriented battle. But therein lies the challenge. Defensively, the Maple Leafs have been rough to watch. I mean, they've been plain, downright stinking horrible in respects to their transition game. Maybe tonight, knowing that Matthews isn't around to save the day and put in 18 to 20 minutes of ice time, some heroes will emerge and demonstrate whether or not they're capable of dealing with his incredibly felt absence.
The Montreal Canadiens have won 6 of their last 8 games, and 2 players are mainly responsible for this run, Brendan Gallagher and Andrew Shaw. In those 8 games, Brendan Gallagher has scored 8 points, 5 goals, and 3 assists, Shaw with 7, 3 goals, and 4 assists. These are great offensive totals for that stretch, but they're bringing more to the table than offense. Gallagher is the Gallagher we remember before he broke his left hand, twice. He's getting smashed in the crease, he's getting smashed against the boards, he's involved in post-whistle scrums, and he's coming up smiling, he's coming up with the puck, he's being inspirational for his teammates. Andrew Shaw is the same Andrew Shaw that we saw in Chicago, the same Andrew Shaw that Bergevin thought he was going to get. He's a buzzsaw, he's annoying, he's making the Canadiens harder to play against, and with chipping in the offense, that's going a huge way. What this secondary scoring is doing for the Montreal Canadiens is huge. It's allowing the goalies to breathe. It's allowing the goalies to know that they can, hey, we can let in 1 or 2 goals and it's not over. The same goes for the defense. The defense can know that they've got a little bit more breathing room as well. They can allow 1 or 2 goals and know that secondary scoring will come in to help alleviate any sort of lead the Montreal Canadiens give up. But most of all, it's helping the primary scoring. It's helping Alex Galchenyuk and Max Pacioretty relax a bit. It's allowing them not to go around squeezing their sticks so hard, thinking that they have to score a goal in every game. The secondary scoring that Shaw and Gallagher are providing is helping the primary scoring in Alex Galchenyuk and Max Pacioretty. And over this next 17-game stretch, where the Canadiens are playing 14 home games, if Shaw and Gallagher can keep it up, it'll go a long way into solidifying and moving the Montreal Canadiens, believe it or not, into a playoff spot.
Our guest tonight on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan is a sports journalism graduate at Centennial College who is a writer with one of our favorite sports websites, Tip of the Tower. He's also the co-host of the Tip of the Tower podcast. Austin Owens is on the show. Austin, thanks for dropping by HVL.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Listen, it's our pleasure. And one of the things that's been irritating me enormously over the last few days is watching this Toronto Maple Leafs team on the West Coast trip and how they've been playing. There have been mixed results. There have been moments where fans have been looking at what they're doing and feeling very proud about the progress they're making. But I'm wondering, from your perspective, how have you looked at these last few, say, 3 or 4 games and some of this luster and enthusiasm, which seems to be wearing off a little bit from people who were maybe a little too quick to put on rose-colored glasses?
I think for me, the Leafs, I don't know if it's reading into their own headlines too much or if it's just learning more about themselves. Obviously, it's still a young team, but the LA trip is always going to be, and just California in general, is always going to be sort of your death streak, I guess you'd be able to call it. I think the Leafs were 0-3 on that trip last year, so, I mean, they've already improved on what they did this year, which is a good step, but last night's game, for instance, I mean, 5-0 down, save for 5 minutes onwards from the second and third. I mean, they had a great stretch there, and Austin Matthews, I was reading today, I think he's only one of a few players that's ever had 2 penalty shots in a game, so, I mean, that's cool. But it's a learning process. I mean, the defense has been terrible. I mean, there's no other way to step around it. They have not looked good. There's been turnovers everywhere. And it's on the forwards as well. I mean, Tyler Bozak and Mitch Marner have been demoted. And then you have guys like Matt Martin. He had probably one of his worst games of the season. And we shouldn't really be talking about Matt Martin. It's kind of weird with this team because it's funny how the guys like Josh Levo and Matt Martin get a lot of the headlines, but that's just the nature of the Toronto media, I guess. But I would say that Jake Gardner has really, really had a rough trip. Roman Polak obviously has had a rough trip. Those two were together last night in LA, and that was hard to watch. I think I tweeted out something along the lines of just give LA the 2 points already after that first goal where Gardner fell. I don't know what those do. I'm not really a big Jake Gardner fan, but we can get into that later. I just think that the Leafs, you couldn't have asked for a better start to the season with this team. And, they have to come down to earth sometime. They were running at nearly a 6-goal-a-game clip or 4 or 5. They still are very close to the tops of the league in goals per game, but a lot of people have been saying they're going to drop off at some point, and that drop off's come on this trip, and it's not getting any easier.
Agreed. And what's interesting is that, you know, you bring up Jake Gardner, a player that improved significantly under what we like to call the Babcock effect of last year. I kind of look at him now as well as Nazem Kadri, and I see a couple of players who maybe are starting to ignore a lot of the fundamental Babcock mantras, replacing it with what has been nothing more than trying to do too much. I mean, you and I saw the same games. Kadri last night especially was victimized from trying to do too much on the penalty kill when all he really needed to do was just dump the puck. And in Gardner's case, there doesn't seem to be the same kind of confidence that he had last year carrying the puck up ice. How do we explain that, in your opinion? Is that a little bit of a residue left over from a grueling year of having to learn a new system? Why do you see there being some resistance now from these players?
You know, we did a defensive preview at the beginning of the year for Tip of the Tower, and I predicted that this would be Jake Gardner's best season of his career. And it hurts because he has all the skill in the world, this player. He is, like, you watch him in the preseason, he's back skating from behind his own net and just beating guys end-to-end. Like, it was ridiculous what he's doing. And he has those flashes where he's fantastic, but I've made the comment on a couple of occasions with Jake Gardner where you can tell if it's going to be one of those nights from Jake Gardner off the first shift, because he's a little too cute with the puck. And there's always been this thing with Jake Gardner that I don't like. When the puck goes into his own end, he decides to slow down and let the forechecker catch up to him, which has always bothered me, because as a Leaf fan, and any Leaf fan can tell you, Jake Gardner is one of, if not the fastest players on this team. So a lot of people have said it's in between the years with him. It's not a basis of skill, which I completely agree with. So I hope he bounces back, but this trip has not been kind to him. And in terms of Kadri, I mean, you said it's just a matter of flicking it high off the boards and getting the puck out. That was a rough shift for him. Mm-hmm. And, I think he'll bounce. He's had a good year so far. It can't be easy for him he's been with Leo Komarov. I mean, those two are stapled together, like Matthews and Nylander, obviously not to the same extent of skill, but, those two have played together, but he's got a different winger with him almost every game now because Babcock's trying to shuffle the line. So, I mean, you're going to play the best teams in the league. I mean, they've really squandered away their chances here. I think a couple of their losses have been bad this year. And Gardner has been on the end of some really, really bad-looking plays. So I hope for his sake that he brings it back and he really turns it around, because he can be one of the Leafs' best defenders if he's just there and his head's in the right place.
Austin, at what point do you think we'll be able to better appreciate just how capable this team is in terms of contending in their division? At what point in the schedule do you say to yourself, okay, I know exactly what to expect from this Maple Leafs team? When does that point happen?
I think that point happens. It's going to be coming up soon, because you're going to see the Leafs. They still haven't played Tampa. I believe this will be their first, next week will be their first time playing Boston, which is always a tough game. I think those Atlantic Division matchups are where you're really going to see what the Leafs are. because I believe that Tampa Bay is the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. They're just running over teams right now. They're the measuring stick, in my opinion. Boston, not to that extent, but Boston always plays Toronto tight. You can see it from the 2013 series on. It's never going to be an easy time with them. I think their biggest challenge has come in the way because they got a lot of these Western Conference teams, and the Western Conference has really been the measuring stick for everyone in the East. The West has been the dominant conference. And I think that you played Chicago. That was the statement game of the year, I would say, for the Leafs. There is nothing that they can do that will eclipse that comeback and victory. And then you beat New York, obviously a slumping team, but they've been a staple in the playoffs for the last decade or so. You beat Anaheim. I mean, that's a sort of a small victory because they're missing half their lineup. And you also beat LA. You give them their first regulation loss. So you see sort of the ups, but you've also seen the downs, the really bad downs for the Leafs. Carolina and New Jersey are easily games they should have had, and just I don't know what their mindset is going into those games. I guess they just look at it on the schedule. And it's sort of what I guess teams used to do to the Leafs when they were in the mid-2000s, and they just looked over them on the schedule, and sometimes the Leafs would be able to pull out a victory. I remember watching the Leafs back when I was little, and you'd see a backup goalie play the Leafs like at least once or twice a week. Like, teams wouldn't even respect the Leafs enough to put a starter in. So maybe it's just them looking over teams and thinking they can just provide skill alone and the defensive play will come and the effort plays will come, and that's just not the case. I mean, they were outworked in both those matchups. So I think more so than the top teams, the LAs, the Tampa Bays, the Pittsburghs, I think the biggest challenge is going to be watching the Leafs and how they handle those teams. Vegas is going to be a big one coming up. But those teams that are at the bottom of the division, in the bottom of the conference, is really going to show you what they are as a team, I think, because that's where they'll show what their true colors are, with their mindset and where they're at, where Mike Babcock has them prepared for.
Let me ask you the same question, Austin, about the Habs. At what point do you say to yourself, this team is not going to make the playoffs? Have you already reached that conclusion?
Well, I had the unique opportunity, as along with Tip of the Tower, I was able to write for A Winning Habit for a little bit, and we'll give a quick shout out to Omar White for holding down the fort over there.
That's right.
Love you, buddy. But I was able to sort of break down a little bit of what the Habs were doing. The turning point for them, I think, was losing Andre Markov. I think that's your leader on the back end.
Yeah.
You know, Shea Weber's there, but Andre Markov has been a rock for the Habs for well over a decade now. And, I mean, Carey Price, I still think he's the best goalie in the world. You know how goalies are. They're, it's like Jake Gardner. They're all in between the years. It's, if you're not ready mentally, then it doesn't matter how good you are athletically. You can have a really bad game any given night. I think for the Habs, Mete has been very good.
Mm-hmm.
But the scoring isn't there. I mean, that's the whole problem with the Habs. It's starting to come around. You've seen some glimpses of it. The game against Ottawa was great. I believe it was Ottawa this week. Yeah. They put up 6 or 7 goals. So it's coming. Jonathan Drouin's looked great. Alex Galchenyuk's putting up some good numbers. I mean, Brendan Gallagher's always going to be there. Max Pacioretty needs to come around. But I think I don't want to say they're out of the playoffs because it's weird not having Montreal in that discussion. They've been very good for a very long time now with Carey Price in the back. Mm-hmm. But I think they just have too many holes. I mean, they've lost Nathan Beaulieu. They've lost Alexander Radulov. Thomas Mikanić isn't exactly the player he used to be. You need guys like Charles Oudon to step up. I mean, there's a lot of holes here, and I hope they turn it around because I'd really like to see a Leafs-Habs series at some point in my life. You know, when the Habs were up, the Leafs were down, and I hope we get to see that at some point. But I mean, Mark Bergevin probably has to make a move here in order to right the ship. I don't know what it is or what he needs to do, but I would say it's either get a scorer in, use some of that extra cap space, and bring in somebody. I know they've been working on possibly a Duchesne. Bergevin's been spotted at a couple Islanders games. I don't know what's going on there with Tavares, possibly. But they need scoring badly. And then I think you have a good one in Mete back there with Weber. So we'll see.
Of course, Johnny T is doing everything he can to become very unrealistic to a lot of clubs the way he's played. The Islanders, of course, will do everything they can to keep him. It's interesting you mentioned Jonathan Drouin. Could you argue that the issue isn't that Jonathan Drouin isn't doing poorly? He's, in fact, doing very well. But isn't the real issue that Mikhail Sergachev is even doing better? Does that shock you?
Oh, my God. I love Mikhail Sergachev, and I'm sorry, Habs fans, but that is a tough pill to swallow, that Jonathan Drouin is a good player, but Mikhail Sergachev is probably going to be a star. Not that Drouin is not a star, but Mikhail Sergachev was a top 10 pick defensively in the draft. He looked NHL ready out of that draft. I mean, he lays the body. He's got a huge slap shot. He plays both ends very well. I mean, he has all the makings to be a very, very good player. And at one point this season, he had more points than Drouin, which is, I mean, I shouldn't be surprised because, like I said, Tampa Bay is just blowing teams out of the water. It's not even close what they're doing right now. With Stamkos and Kucherov firing the way they are, I mean, it's bound to happen. You're going to have a lot of points passing the puck to those two. But, I mean, Sergachev was a big loss for them. I think you look at the team, and maybe if Victor Mete doesn't make this team, if Sergachev is still here, I think Sergachev and Weber would have been an amazingly good. It's just the chain of events. I mean, what happens to the Carl Alzner situation if Sergachev, like, you never know if they had that on the back burner when they signed Alzner. Obviously, I believe it happened after they signed Alzner free agency. So you look at it and you just think, like, what if, I guess, is the best way of putting this. What if Sergachev was still here? Do we not have to take on that cap of Alzner? I mean, he's still on his rookie contract. That's some cap relief for a couple more years until you have to pay your big guys. And then, I don't know, I guess I have a crush of sorts on Sergachev. I really liked him when I was looking into that draft. And I think he's going to be a good one. But Jonathan Drouin is the player they needed now, and he's filling a role that the Canadiens needed him to. So it's not a bad thing for the Habs. They're going to have a good scorer for a long time. It's just at what price.
Precisely. And we'll definitely see what plays out in the weeks and months to come. It'll be nothing short of intriguing. Austin, tell our listening audience here at HVL what you've been up to, a little bit about what's going on with Tip of the Tower and how they can find you on social media.
Alrighty, so you can follow me at _AustinOwens for some mediocre at best content, I would say. At Tip of the Tower, we're doing a lot of really good stuff. I think we have a really good core group there. The hockey side's run by myself and David Morsuti for the Leafs, basically, and then we also have Jake Middleton, who does some of our prospect analysis, which is always welcome. We like to see him get his stuff up there. We cover a little bit of everything. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're interested in, say, the Jays, the Raptors, we like to cover it all. I cover the Toronto Rock as well, the lacrosse team. So we sort of have our hands in a bunch of different areas, which is nice. So going forward, I think I'll probably be doing a prospect roundup for every couple of weeks, I would say, for Tip of the Tower, just going through the Leafs and how their guys are doing, some of their lesser-known guys in the CHL and overseas. I always do observation posts, so just a couple thoughts on each game for the Leafs. They haven't been very pretty the last couple of nights, but, I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Absolutely, and I have to tell you, any opportunity for Jays and Leafs content, you know you can count me in. You've been listening to Austin Owens from Tip of the Tower. Be sure to check out his excellent podcast. Austin, it was a real pleasure having you on our show. Look forward to having you back on one of our live roundtables.
Thank you for having me.